This is America Weekend. I'm Mike Bennett. In a moment, we'll talk with Kimberly Locke from American Idol fame as Idol began its 14th season this year. But first, the flu, it's spreading, and it's now widespread. 43 of the 50 states reporting flu cases. The Centers for Disease Control say the 43 states are up from 36 states the prior week. Six children have died from the flu during the first full week of December, bringing the flu deaths this year to 21. Charlie Sheen went on a Twitter rant against Kim Kardashian after she allegedly refused a six-year-old girl's request for an autograph. Sheen tweeted that a friend told him that the young fan cries about it every night before she goes to sleep and added, "You are lucky that anyone cares about your gross and giggly bag of funk you dare call a rear end." He also tweeted, "My apologies to your hubby. Great guy, I'm sure. I hope his vision returns one day." Another one said, "Zero gratitude, zero awareness, zero talent. A pox on the face of entertainment she is." Sheen later apologized and said he accidentally posted the messages after originally writing them a month ago, but stood by his comments. He wrote, "Dear Kim, my extreme bad. Really embarrassed by my actions. I was already mad about something else." As for Kim, she has denied the claim about the autograph, saying she always makes time for her fans. Blake Lively and Ryan Reynolds have welcomed their first child over the holidays. The 27-year-old actress gave birth to their child near their home in Westchester, New York, just before the new year. Lively and Reynolds married in 2012. The child arrived earlier than expected, but mom and baby are both healthy and doing well. There's no official word on the little one's gender or name. Cameron Diaz and Benji Madden have gotten married. They tied the knot in an intimate ceremony at their home in Los Angeles. Guests included Reese Witherspoon, Gwyneth Paltrow, Samantha Ronson, and Robin Anton. Benji's nephew Joel Madden and Nicole Richie's son Sparrow served as the ring bearer. Joining Diaz as her bridesmaids were best friends Nicole Richie, Drew Barrymore, and her sister and assistant Jessie Lutz. The actress and rocker have been dating since May and got engaged just before Christmas. American Idol returned this week with season 14. And with us as a regular guest here is Kimberly Locke. You know her from season 2 on American Idol when she finished third behind, what's his name, and the other guy. I'm just kidding. Clay Aiken and Ruben Studdard. How are you, Kimberly?
I'm good, Mike. How are you?
With the return of Idol this week, it's got to bring back memories for you. So let's start at the very beginning. How did you end up on American Idol?
Oh, my gosh. It's such a funny story. You know, I just graduated college, and I can remember it was a Wednesday night, and I guess the show, I think the result show was on Wednesday night then, and I was actually headed to church that night, Wednesday night Bible study, and my friend, I would always stop and see one of my friends. I'd either stop and see my girlfriend or my sister-in-law. And on separate nights, 2 weeks in a row, they both sat me down and made me watch American Idol. And they were like, "You got to watch the show. You got to watch the show. We think you should be on the show."
You got to remember, this is the first season of American Idol, something brand new and revolutionary at the time. So you weren't even aware of what was going on until they pointed it out to you, right?
Exactly. Nobody even knew what the show was about and how great the show was going to be. And my friends were like, "You have to audition for the show."
And they based that on what? They had heard you sing in church?
Yeah, well, they, you know, my brother's wife, of course, she knew. She was around me all the time. And then my friend, Pam, she knew that I was a singer. And, you know, at that point, Mike, I had actually decided that I was done with singing and I was preparing for law school. So this was really, you know, not a part of my plan to go and audition for another show.
So American Idol saved us from having one more lawyer.
I guess that's one way to look at it.
And they also, they revealed a tremendous singer. So your friends and relatives convinced you to try out, and then how did you actually go about it? Were you reluctant, or did you say, "Oh, no, I can do this"?
Mike, I was so indecisive, and I was so nervous, and I just thought, you know, "Oh, I'm going on another audition that I'm probably not going to get. Why am I doing this? I've already decided that I wanted to go to law school. I need to stay focused." And I remember the morning of the audition, it was October 30th, 2002. It was cold outside, and it was drizzling rain. And I turned on the news the night before to see all these people sleeping outside and camping outside in tents, and I'm looking at the TV like, I am not doing that. You know, that's the first thing I said to myself. I was like, I am not doing that. It's cold outside. I'm going to be sick. So I went to bed that night, and the next morning, I literally was laying in bed at 6 o'clock in the morning, staring at the ceiling, asking myself, are you going? Are you not going? And I was very close to not going. And I literally jumped out of bed, got dressed, and went down there. And shortly after I arrived and they gave me a wristband and a number, they closed the line off.
Wow. So you were that close to not even making it. Even when you finally reluctantly decided to go, you almost got shut out.
Yep, exactly. So it was pretty, you know, the one thing I learned from that experience is that in life, sometimes we have nothing to lose and everything to gain. So in that situation, you know, me going to one more audition, I'd already been to 1,000 others, you know, why not go to this one? That's how I looked at it. And that 1,001 audition is the one that got me to where I wanted to be.
Now, was this in Nashville?
It was in Nashville. It was like, Mike, it was probably 2.5 miles from my house.
Wow, I didn't realize it was that close. Yeah.
Yeah, so it was a pretty interesting process. And it was nerve-wracking because I didn't know what I was getting myself into.
Now, did you have a song prepared? What did you sing for them?
I did. Of course, I sang Somewhere Over the Rainbow, and I sang it as many times as I possibly could. And, you know, when you go into the auditions, the first few auditions are with the producers and, you know, the segment producers and things like that before you even get to, you know, as you go through the process, the people that you audition for, they're higher up in the ranks. So, right, you know, and then the last audition is with the final judges. So, you know, when you go in, you don't know how much time you have. You might only have 30 seconds. So I had to find, like, my sweet spot in the song. So I started right in the middle of Somewhere Over the Rainbow and just went for it. And I remember there were 10 people in the room. They literally said, everybody stay except for blah, blah, blah. And they called out your number. They didn't even call you by name. They only called out your number. And I stayed.
Wow. So what segment of the song was it you sang?
I went right to the change. You want me to sing it for you?
Sure.
I went right to the bridge part of the song where it goes, someday I'll wish upon a star and wake up where the clouds are far behind me, where troubles melt like lemon drops. And then I went right into that soaring part.
I can see why they were affected by that voice.
You know, singing over the cell phone is a no-no. You know that.
I know. Well, I thank
only
you.
Only because I love you.
I know. Thank you for indulging me. But it's great to hear you just do it spontaneously like that, as if it was, you know, 2002 all over again. You can obviously still hit all those notes. So when you got to the final, who was in the judging room when you finally got to the pinnacle of the show?
It was the original judges. It was the original Randy, Paula, and Simon. And I remember at that point, out of thousands of people, there were only like 60 of us left on that final day. And, you know, it took all day to get in and see the judges because they're all about hurry up and wait and build the anticipation. And I just remember walking in and, you know, I knew who Paula was, but I don't really think I knew who Simon was. I kind of knew who Randy was. And I just went in there and I gave it my best, you know, and I made it through.
Can you remember what they individually said to you?
I remember Randy just kind of, you know, leaning back in his chair, and he was like, wow, you know, wow. That's all he could say. That's what he said. He kept looking at me. I was like, okay, are you going to say anything else? and he didn't really say much. He didn't say much more than that. But Simon said to me, he actually said to me that technically, you know, I was one of the best singers that he had heard. And that made me feel really good. I think they edited that part out of the show. But, you know, to have him say that I was a great singer, it was really, you know, it meant something in that moment. And it still means something. It was, you know, that was the beginning of my entire journey and my process. And it was great.
And Paula, what did she say?
You know, I don't remember exactly what Paula said, but I'm sure whatever she said was very nice because she was always very nice to the contestants. You know, she was like the artist's ally. You know, she's the one that always made you feel comfortable and made you feel good no matter what.
Well, listen, I know there's a lot more to this story, your whole journey. Maybe we'll continue next week as these contestants that we're going to watch on Idol begin the same or similar process that you went through, and you can, you know, give us that first-person report as to what they're going through.
Absolutely. I would love to, because it's very funny now, sitting on this side of the TV watching it. I know exactly what they're going through. I know what it's like standing in the wings backstage waiting to come on stage. It is nerve-wracking. So it'll be interesting to see how this group handles that intensity.
All right, Kimberly Locke, always very interesting. And, of course, I love the fact that you sang for us this week. That was very impromptu, but appreciated.
You're welcome.
And a happy new year. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you next week.
Okay. See you soon.
With Kimberly Locke, I'm Mike Bennett, and this is America Weekend on the Envision Radio Network.
America Weekend.
Big success in a minute with George and Mary Lynn.
How can you overcome the resistance to do something you know you have to do?
Use this simple trick to turn your attitude around. Let go of the tightness.
Leo Babuda of Zen Habits says to first notice the tightness. Pay attention to your body and mind as you do any activity. Work, meetings, exercise, cleaning, talking with a loved one. If you notice tightness, that's your cue.
Next, he says to visualize it dissipating. Imagine the tightness floating away into the air, dissolving into little bits and blown away by the breeze. Then take a deep breath and smile.
By letting go of the tightness, your mind can approach any activity with a relaxed attitude. It leads to big success.
Find big success at BIGGSuccess.com.
Do you have troubled skin or acne? With Proactive Plus, your acne can heal and you can help prevent new breakouts from happening. Call Proactive Plus now and receive a 60-day risk-free trial along with two free extras and free shipping. Call 800-393-6139. That's 1-800-393-6139.
Think green.
Harrison with you. Are coffee plants in jeopardy from global warming? Good question, since most coffee is grown in treeless sun, because sun-grown coffee grows the biggest harvests with the highest sales. But with climate change, University of Michigan researchers report that shade-grown coffee raised under a canopy of diverse trees not only ensures continued crops from leaving alone the surrounding plants and animals, but shade trees act as a firewall between coffee plants and droughts and powerful storms. Also, natural shade trees protect the coffee plants from harsh sun and heat, along with dirt erosion and scorching. As weather patterns continue to radicalize and planet Earth continues to heat, the way coffee actually grows in nature, in the shade, in fact, will ensure the survival of our blessed coffee bean. From the Greeniverse.
Think green with Harrison at GoHarrison.com.